exciting to you?
Happy New Year! Welcome back! Welcome back! Yeah, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only, Mystifying Oracle Radio for 2015. Your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, Demon Hunter!
That would be me.
What's going on, baby brother?
Oh, I got old. I got old this week, man. I got so old.
You did get old. You got another year old. Well, you did that a while back, right? Another year old.
Every year it seems like I'm getting older.
Yeah, it does seem like. Hey, we're not your savior. It's Sunday night again. Because it is Sunday night. Again.
It turns out to be the Sunday night every week.
Yeah, and welcome back to the one and only Mystifying Oracle Radio. We made it for another year. Special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you listening? They want to know. Check them out at actionaudioapps.net. Thanks for being so cool, guys.
If you're listening to us right now on Ustream, I'm trying to log into the chat room right now.
On Ustream, huh?
Yeah, I'm trying to get in there. It takes us like 3 computers each to run this show, and
if we knew what we were doing, it'd probably be one.
Yeah.
One computer. Hey, I actually got to tell you, for Christmas, I got these, the kids always get really cool stuff, right?
They
get like ties and shoes and stuff like that. Yeah. For their weird dad, the Ghost Man Sean B, I got the McFarlane Toys came out with these miniature, not play sets, but like model kits. They're kind of like Legos, but they're not. They look like real models. And They made 3 of them.
What? Do they look like Cindy Crawford models?
I wish. I'm going to buy one of those dolls this week. No, they're the Walking Dead McFarlane sets, model sets or whatever. And here on the G&D show desk. You might see it right here, Nathan. You can see it. Daryl Dixon on his bike going down Interstate 85 in Georgia. It's even got the grass. I had to put the grass in and a little zombie behind the guardrail. And it's just really cool. The kids got me one. I got that.
Very nice.
And then I also, because we're huge Walking Dead fans, when I seen them come out, I seen they had the prison set. And what it is it's the prison tower. And it has the gate and everything, and I think it has Glenn fighting off some zombies or whatever, and you can buy the little characters. Of course, it's all overpriced. But I got the prison set for $60, and I went on eBay the other day, and it's $140 now.
Mmm.
Huh? What do you think about that?
I think you're spending a lot of money that could go into equipment for the G&D show.
Oh, no. We're already in debt.
Literally, Chrissy was joking. She came into the studio the other day and said, "What's this huge box?" I'm like, "It's parts."
Yeah.
Parts of what? I'm like, "It's parts of the studio. Don't touch it. I might need them."
Well, I was thinking about switching to that Wi-Fi system, but that's just too crazy. We just now mastered the cord system.
Yeah, we've got to stick to the corded system, dude. We download too much data.
Data, that's true. Hey, listeners around the world, Demon Hunter, before we forget, 2015, Happy New Year, kicking us off! You ready?
Wait, it's 2015?
Yeah, it's 2015.
Didn't we just start this show like 2 or 3 years ago?
2007? Welcome to our 9th year, buddy.
Oh my
In
god.
In the shadows. Tonight's guest! You didn't expect that, did you? Tonight's guest.
We started this on the fields of Gettysburg in 2006.
Woo! Tonight's guest, award-winning documentary filmmaker, director-producer Aaron Kagyu, stops by. He produced and directed, in 2003, a 30-minute documentary titled Inside the Bridgewater Triangle. His experience inspired the recent documentary film, The Bridgewater Triangle. Please welcome tonight to studio, Aaron Kagyu. Actually, I'm going to say that when we have him on the phone. I misread my notes. Woo! Tonight's guest, guys, we're going back in the shadows once again to find out about one of America's most mysterious locations. Not only the Bermuda Triangle raises some eyebrows, but this place called the Bridgewater Triangle out in Massachusetts. Many don't know about this, but tonight they will. Stay tuned. Bigfoot, ghost, aliens, weird, strange monsters in the Bridgewater Triangle. Tonight only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio, your ghost man and demon hunter show.
My goodness.
That was good.
Sounds like we have a lot planned.
We do have a lot planned. A lot of questions for director Aaron Kagyu. I hope I'm saying his name right. I called him before the show. I said, brother, you got to tell me how to say this name because I don't want to get it right. And he said, Kagyu.
Hey, let's remember when we went to film TV, I said, can I change my last name for the show? Because nobody's ever going to be able to pronounce it. They said, no, keep it. It's good. Now, every time I get introduced, it's Nathan Schoonover, Nathan Schoonover. I'm like, just go with it. It's
Nathan Schoonover. That is a weird name. It's Dutch-Irish or whatever.
It's Dutch-Irish. It's a Dutchman raised by Irish people.
You're a Dutchman. Flying Dutchman. That's your new nickname for the show, Flying Dutchman.
Yeah, and yours is Dutch Oven.
Dutch. Oh, he's starting it out with dirty jokes. That's awesome. I'm proud of you, though.
2015 starting off right.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, bro, 2015, what's going on? We don't have time to be lame. People usually, actually, that's our show. We sit here every week and we talk about how lame things are, but we're not going to do it this year, folks.
Lame this week.
There's nothing lame going on this week, is there?
Nothing that I can think of.
I called Nathan, guys, before the show, and we always talk kind of about what are we going to discuss tonight? Some of the topics. You know, it might not be as easy as you guys think. We do like to talk, but after 9 years, after 8 years, 8 years and 2 days, or 4 days, we...
When I'm doing my bit, Sean's sitting there reading porn.
Yeah, with my feet up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway. Hey, I was going to try... I was telling you before the show... getting off topic here. Those e-cigarettes, I started trying those because everybody knows I occasionally dip Wintergreen Long Cut Skull Packets. And I've been trying to cut that. Yeah, so, you know, I'm trying your guys' new wave fancy, looks like a silver bullet here, where you push the button and you suck in these air vapors or whatever.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, me too. And it tastes like... a fog machine. You might as well suck off a fog machine. You know what I mean? Suck
off.
You
got to get the flavors, dude.
Well, I got the flavors. I'm a blue icy right now or whatever. But I just...
Oh, well, that's like mint. You got to get like... what's your favorite candy? What's your favorite fruit? What's your favorite soda? You can go out and buy flavors.
I did like the cotton candy.
There you go.
The cotton candy one was pretty good. But I found myself smoking this in one hand and then chewing in the other, so... I possibly added a new nail to my coffin. Thank you. Thank you. They're coming out with things on that now. I mean, my God, they're talking about, they said just the other day, tobacco use is down by children. The numbers of use by children, the tobacco is down. Drinking is down, stuff like that. And then they go, but wait a minute, the e-cigarette might not be allowed in, in place. It's vapor. I don't,
well, it's one of those things, too. I mean, when it first came out, I used to sit in my office and puff on it at work. Didn't bother anybody, anything like that. Then all of a sudden, my office came out and said, oh, we're not allowing them in the offices anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, thanks a lot.
It might offend somebody. This nation has became pussified. Wussified? I meant wussified.
Wussified would probably be better on you on the radio.
That's true. I did say wussified.
Yes. We'll bleep that out later.
Whatever.
We'll fix
monkey.
It in the mix.
Don't judge me, monkey. Don't judge
Don't
me.
Don't judge me, monkey.
Don't do it, man. Oh, you're crazy. You know what?
Don't judge me, monkey.
Oh, anyway, 2015, back to the, so I started doing that, and I'm sitting down here in studio trying not to, because if you hold the button down, you hear the crackle.
Well, know? Yeah, it sounds, like I said, it sounds like this.
Yes. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah.
Do that some more over the air. That's
sounds
beautiful.
Like static over the air. It's,
Funky monkey.
What everybody wants.
Right. I don't know.
I'm here for the gangbang?
What were we going to talk
You're
about?
You're always here for the gangbang.
That's true.
You're, every
that.
Time you come late, so you missed the gangbang. If you came earlier,
yes.
You'd have made the gangbang.
Yes. be careful. Hey, Demon Hunter, speaking of the new year.
Yes, sir.
Strange new year traditions around the world. I found that today.
Did you?
I did. It was very intriguing. You want to hear about it?
I would love to hear about it.
What about the Shadow Nation? You think they might want to...
I don't know. Nobody's talking in the Shadow Nation, so...
Nobody's talking? You know, it's just silent there, huh?
Let's just do it for us.
Let's
of course,
us.
We did take a long vacation for the holidays. We took 2 weeks off. Oh, my gosh.
Well, that's fine. Okay, from great balls of fire to possums, grape eating, and animals whispering, we revealed the world's weirdest New Year's customs. Great balls of fire, this comes from Scotland, in Stonehaven, Scotland. There's a custom of parading through the streets on New Year's Eve while swinging blazing balls of fire around your head. The tradition is part of Scotland's Hogmanay celebrations, although its root traces back to the Vikings.
Wow. Sean used to swing blazing balls, but he broke up with that girl after that.
Yeah, a lot of penicillin. I did, actually. No, I'm kidding. I didn't do it. Strange New Year's traditions, again, number two.
Okay.
It's got an old lady in the thing. Red underwear. This comes out of Turkey.
Red underwear.
Red undies. And she's holding some, old lady holding some girl's panties. String thong panties.
Hmm.
From Turkey. What better?
They're her sons.
Right. Probably. What better way to bring luck to your loved ones than by wearing red underneath your New Year's party outfit? The practice is especially popular in Turkey, where stalls selling red lingerie appear over the festive period and sell out fast of New Year's Eve.
Hmm.
Red.
That's what you're getting for Christmas next year.
Red on New Year's Eve. I never thought about that.
I wear boxers, if anybody's wondering.
Here's another one. Animal whispering. Where do you think this is from? What part of the world? Animal whispering. You'll never get it.
Israel.
It sounds like Omania. Yes, Romania. How'd you guess? Animal whispering. Farmers try to hear their animals talk in a ritual on New Year's Eve, which, if successful, signifies not just a Dr. Doolittle gift from communicating with our furry relatives, but good luck for the coming year.
Is this, like, based on the Christian belief that the on the day of Jesus' birth, the animals spoke?
I never heard that. I was raised Christian.
It was more of a Catholic thing.
Yeah. That's bad.
Yeah. Bad.
Mass kissing. Venice, Italy. You ready?
Nay.
Venice, not Italy. Just in Venice. St. Mark's Square is known for holding not only a big firework display over the basin of St. Mark, but for something far more unusual. A mass kiss in the plaza, where everybody kisses.
I'm a bit too much of a germaphobe for that.
Yeah, I am too. So
I don't like to shake people's hands. What are you talking about?
I wonder if it becomes like a... Well, they're open, you know, with their sexuality.
And where was this take... Where did this take place?
I just told you. Venice.
Venice. Yeah. Venice.
And that's the city of love.
I think Valtrex will be making a whole new business there.
The things they don't cover in Indiana Jones. Remember the Last Crusade when he went over?
Ah, Venice.
Suitcase walk. Comes from out of Ecuador. Been dreaming of a holiday, but worried it might never happen? They ask you, Nathan. Take your empty suitcase for a stroll around the block, ignoring the curtain twitching from your neighbors, and make the dream a reality in the coming year. Or so goes the Ecuadorian tradition, anyway. So if you want to go on a trip, you've been putting it off, maybe we should do this, Nathan.
Okay.
You take a walk around the block with your suitcase.
Okay, the only problem is I live in the country. A block here is about 10 square miles.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Underwater.
You've driven out of my house, you know.
Underwater tree planting. Siberia. Okay. This is a Siberian custom of cutting a hole in the ice, covering Lake Baikal, and diving to the lake's bottom while carrying a New Year's tree. Note, only professional divers participate. Do not do it home, kids. Don't try it in the river by your house there. Dinner for One in Germany. This old British comedy sketch about a lonely 90th birthday dinner has been inexplicably embraced by Germans and is broadcast in many homes during New Year's festivities. It's up to the butler. It is up
the
to
the butler.
Yeah, it's up to the butler, James, to play the role of Miss Sophie's departed friends, getting more and more drunk as he does so. I don't understand that. So they're reenacting a movie and drinking. You gotta check that out. It's a German film.
Probably won't be I guess so.
Dinner for One. That's the name of the movie. I'll check it out. We should try these traditions every year.
We should. We should try a few of them. Like we used to try out different things that people said were going to cause stuff to happen. I think we did that on TV
and
once or twice.
Yeah, and then stuff started happening and we quit. Okay, here, look. Bear dances in Romania. Here we go again. These cats out in Romania. They're Romania crazy.
How bare were they when they danced?
People wanting to celebrate New Year's in Romania put on bear costumes and furs and dance at different houses to keep evil at bay.
Do they ride unicycles?
No, just bears. They're carrying around. Oh, PETA would go nuts with this. They're wearing grizzly furs. Where's PETA?
Okay.
Yeah, they must have killed them. Romania. Dracula.
They inherited those furs.
I don't know. Possum dropping. Here in America, Demon Hunter.
Possum dropping.
Yes, sir. In the town of Brasstown, North Carolina, a possum in a transparent box is lowered over a noisy crowd in the world's only known possum drop. It reflects Brasstown's claim to be the possum capital of the world.
Well.
So that must be their ball dropping.
That must be.
A possum is lowered.
The possum
down.
Drop.
That's amazing.
What poor innocent animal could we shove into a plastic box and lower down for a holiday?
You. Grape eating in Spain.
Okay, I can see that.
Revelers sing in the New Year.
I got some grapes you can eat.
See? In the New Year in Spain have their mouths full when they try to stuff 12 grapes in it.
Fill your mouth with two.
Two. Aha. One Aha. for each crime of the clock during the countdown. Each chime, not crime. One grape for each chime.
Crime.
So it'd be 12 grapes. Why didn't they just come out and say 12 grapes? I don't understand this. Cold swimming. This is out of the United Kingdom.
What is this?
Cold swimming. Nearly 2,000 people. Well, I think the title would break that down for you. Nearly 2,000 people braved the icy water last year in Sodersfoot. That's the real name. Sodersfoot Wells. To raise money in a charity swim. The cold is also perfect for curing a New Year's Eve hangover. So I bet it is. Swims take place in the 5th and 4th in Scotland, too.
I don't know if it cures your hangover, but I don't think you care about your hangover anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't cure shrivel. Turtle heading. You know what I mean? Graveyard camp in Chile. Oh, listen.
They go in half men, half women. They all come out women.
That's true. So. Locals in Talca, central Chile, like to see in the new year in the company of their dead relatives. Thought to have begun when a family broke in 1 year to be near their dead father. The town mayor now opens the graveyard after late night mass, and thousands sit surrounded by candles while classical music plays.
Okay.
You'd get into that, wouldn't you?
I would enjoy that.
Yeah. I can see that. Okay, number 13, last but not least, throwing furniture. This comes out of South Africa. Look out below, they say.
You know, I live in Connecticut, and I think a few people who live over in Bridgeport celebrate New Year's that way, throwing furniture, because I hear a lot of police sirens. So
is that going to be like, are you starting a civil war here on our show?
Yeah, there's a lot of course, now I'm going to get a lot of angry hate mail from Bridgeport.
You're dividing Connecticut, my friend.
Hey, if they can do it on Family Guy, we can do it here.
See? Look out below, it's the idea of starting the new year afresh that leads residents of Johannesburg, those in Hillsborough in particular, to throw old furniture out their windows. Italians follow a similar tradition, and not wanting to be lumbered with anything unwanted, conduct an early spring cleaning by way of their windows. I'd hate to be a garbage man the next morning.
I'd hate to be like a unhappy wife at that point, because if you get rid of everything unwanted, it's...
You throw her out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Would you go, out of all those, what do you think the one that you would rather do there?
Well, I'm not kissing everybody, so there goes that one.
Well, I think you could kiss who you would like. I don't think you'd have to kiss
me. I don't know. It sounds like a pretty group kiss thing going on there.
I don't know.
It's kind of, and you never know who you kissed, who they might have kissed. And
that's true, but you know,
you don't know where, you know, every mouth that she touches has touched another mouth, and you don't know where that mouth has been.
It would be like in college all over again.
Oh, you know God, I mean? No.
Hey, I got something, Demon Hunter. Did you hear about this? The Argentinian president, Cristina Kirchner, has bizarre werewolf mishap.
You know, I did hear about this.
No, you didn't. Are you serious?
I did.
No, I don't know. This is the president of Argentina. This is serious, guys. She adopted a boy as her godson to prevent him from becoming a werewolf. May have been greatly exaggerated, is what it says.
Yeah, I kind of know this story.
On December 23, why, did you adopt somebody and keep him?
No, but I'm a seventh son of a seventh son, so.
Lycanthropy. Lycanthropy. Lycanthropy.
You're never going to be a werewolf. You can't even say it.
Oh, I can get it right. On December 23rd, Argentine President Cristina Kirchner adopted Yair Tawil. Drink up, guys.
Oh, is this the G&D in the news?
Yeah, remember, we are not going to do the segment anymore. We were just going to
Well, then, folks, remember, this is Ghostman and Demon Hunter in the news. Every time Sean and I make a mistake, you take a drink. Because we don't read the news in advance, so chances are you're going to get pretty drunk. And if you do get drunk, don't drive, because we won't take responsibility and all that fun stuff. And yeah. With this, please listen responsibly.
You made me start the music.
I made you do it.
You broke the format segments, how we were going to start something new. Oh, well, it's always funner with today's strange news, fresh from the G&D Show Vaults, guys, where you get the best. We're right in the middle of the Argentine president. She adopts a Jewish werewolf baby. That's the actual story. On December 23rd, Argentine President Christine Kirchner adopted Yair Tawil, drink 21, as her godson as part of a tradition that has been performed in the country for more than 100 years. Tradition dictates that the president adopts the seventh son or daughter of family as a godchild, that childs get a medal and education to the age of 21. Until 2009, Demon Hunter, the tradition was only available to Catholics. But Tawil, drink up, guys, was the first Jewish person to be adopted by the Argentine president, according to The Independent. But what Kirchner described as a magical moment on Twitter has become a hairy situation. Nah!
Ah.
Thanks to some confusion, it says. It seems there is another Argentine tradition called El Labanzon. Drink up, guys, just in case. A belief that a family's seventh son turns into a werewolf starting on the first Friday after the boy's 13th birthday and every full moon thereafter, the New York Daily News reports. The belief was allegedly so widespread, Shadow Nation, in the 19th century that parents would kill the seventh son, oh my God, to prevent a future teenage werewolf. Didn't they see Teen Wolf? You can't kill. That would have been a definite twist to Teen Wolf, wouldn't it?
It would have.
Oh.
Son, I've opened the bathroom door. I have something to tell you.
I'm dead. I don't know. Anyway, oh, look, there's a video coming up on the side of this. Hey, have you seen that chick that does Beethoven with her boobs?
I have not.
Oh, my God, it's amazing. It's amazing. I can't even, I've lost my place here. She's doing Beethoven, and she did Jingle Bells with her boobs, too. She flexes them. You can appreciate this. It's a great story, but the two customs are not related. Welcome to ADD, guys. Ha ha, radio. According to the Argentine historian Daniel Bachmasida, drink up, guys, the local myth of the Labanzon is not in any way connected to the custom that began over 100 years ago, by which every seventh son or seventh daughter born in Argentina becomes godchild to the president. Bachmasida told The Guardian. The detail did not stop The Independent from blending the two separate customs and reporting the Kirchner adopted Tawil to prevent him from becoming a werewolf.
Dude.
See?
That poor Tashna.
She's flexing her boobs again.
Hey, dude, you know how every Christmas I go away to a Yule fest and perform a sumble where I make my oaths for the year?
No.
Yes, you do. Every year we talk about this. Come on.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay. You know that's a Viking custom.
Is it really?
It is. Did you know that besides sumbles and raiding people, that Vikings may have had such a bad attitude because they suffered from chronic worms?
Really?
It turns out that's the fact that Nordic Vikings, who plagued and pillaged their way through Europe 1,000 years ago, may have had a. Jeez, this is where you drink, folks.
Oh man.
May have had a.
Drink up,
It's
guys.
not letting me read it, Sean.
Look, this
May have
chick.
had a reputation as villains because they suffered from chronic worms. The infestation of Viking warriors, identified by a team of scientists using DNA from the toilets of Vikings settlements at Tissø,
Tissot! Drink up, guys!
modern-day Denmark, excuse me, have a drink,
Yes.
was so bad they say that it would have been painful and probably left them in a permanent bad mood.
Oh.
Don't you feel bad for those
Gangbang?
poor Vikings
Yes, I
now?
do.
Dr. Martin So from the Center of
Martin!
Geogenetics, I
Eogenetics.
got
Drink
it
up.
right,
Drink up, guys.
at
Oh, good
Copenhagen
grief.
University said the toilet DNA
The
dates
pooper!
Oh,
back
good
to
grief.
usage of Danish Viking Age settlements. Dating back to the year 1018
Ooh.
and
Oh,
1030.
God.
He said the Viking excrement samples were full of ancient eggs from parasites, the families including Arsis, Tertius, and Thalia.
Drink, drink, drink.
Drink! Which all have unpleasant numbers.
Marsha,
That
Marsha,
thrive
Marsha.
well inside the intestinal system of humans and house animals.
Oh.
The morphological have a drink. Morphological examination
Poop shoot.
revealed among
Yeah.
them eggs of human whipworm, roundworm, and so-called Fasciola hepiscida parasite. A brown worm-like parasite,
Yeah.
otherwise usually found in farm animals.
Up their chute, right?
Yes, the
Oh, shoot.
parasites measure
Yeah.
about 30 millimeters, attack the liver and gallbladder of its host, and cause extremely painful
Poop
infections.
shoot. Yeah.
Oh,
Only we could
ready
get
for
a laugh
six.
out of roundworm.
I'm ready for
Equine
six.
roundworm is still very common in humans.
It is.
It's pinkish and white and reaches about 35 millimeters.
Right.
The findings indicate that the health of the rugged heathens suffered from poor hygiene and their close cohabitation with housing and farm animals, such as sheep and cattle, that lived in
I'm
their
ready for
buildings, according
six.
to Dr. Sue, had added.
Seuss!
He added that the new testing of DNA
One little
evidence, let's just say he said the DNA testing of old excrement
Pooh!
can help reveal ancient travel. Migration patterns because the intense parasites having been sighted in their DNA.
Yes.
Yeah, you got me on this one. The article on the Viking toilet was published in a late edition of the Journal of Parasitology.
They didn't cover that in the X-Files, did they?
Not parapsychology, parasitology.
Right.
Oh my gosh, I lost it on the last paragraph.
Did they cover that in the X-Files?
They didn't, but if you want it, folks, if you want to read more about worms, go to the Mirror. They'll have it there.
Poopy! That's terrible. I can't believe you. You have no dignity, sir. Hey, oh. Check this out. Remember I was telling you about that chick?
Yeah.
All right, I found another one here. Hot girl plays Jingle Bells in cleavage.
Can you hear? You have your own built-in instrument. So, just stick it in here.
See? Listen now. She lubed them up.
My boots and I are
listen.
Jingle bells.
Oh, she's talented. Listen to that. Oh.
Yo, Sean, we were going a little crazy with the show because we didn't think anybody was listening, but Jill's in the chat room now and she just, she said, thanks for the worm story. She just ate.
That's good. Wait till she gets to the chick with the boobies. Did you hear it, though? Did you? I mean.
I heard it. I was so impressed.
You have to appreciate these kind of things, Demon Hunter. I mean, you can't just, you know, it's not just anybody that can that can do that. So, whatever.
Hey, Sean, some 10,000 people.
Yeah, yeah.
Some 10,000 people watched that video.
Yeah, they did.
They also applied for jobs as paintball testers.
Yeah.
The UK Paintball said that they were stunned by the response to their advert for to pay $40,000, or sorry, 40,000 euros a year for a prorated paintball tester, oh. As well as a Briton that has... You're still just going to keep playing that every time I say something.
I'm done! I didn't
there
play was,
there has been interest...
It's talent.
As far... Oh. Far field as US, the U.S. and Canada and India. This so apparently they're going to pay 40,000 euros for you to be shot by paintballs. That's about $70,000 a year?
I'll shoot people. Me and you shoot people for free.
No, to get shot.
Oh.
You have to, like, get shot by paintballs.
Well, why don't you just go to the paintball park? Surely they got them there.
Well, the thing is, they're going to pay you to get shot.
Really?
40,000 euros a year.
Well, she's getting shot with paintballs. Okay, let's do that. Let's go over there and...
Candy bars.
Better money than we're making now.
That's true, which is goose eggs. I don't know, Demon Hunter. I don't know what this
rule predicted that so many people were going to want to make a living getting shot.
I don't know. Is that it for that story?
Okay, go ahead. Do your story.
No, go ahead. I was waiting on your story. I didn't know if that was the conclusion.
Let's just say if they had any... if they are and have any relativity to high pain thresholds, the advert tells them they might just be the opportunity for you. So apparently they're advertising for people to take one for the team, take a few balls in the face.
And... what do you think about that, hot girl? She don't know. Oh, wait. Anyway.
What
anyway.
Is she playing again, Sean?
It's Jingle Bells. She's got a whole Greatest Hits album. When it hit her, it is.
No, that's okay.
It's the Greatest Hits. She actually plays the Moody Blues and the Big Boppers. Get it? The Big Boppers. Whatever. Humor's wasted on you. It's wasted on you. Anyway, let's see here. Do you want to get one more story out if we totally lost it, or can we bring it back here?
Sure, let's bring it back.
Anyway. Let's see here. What to do? I don't know what to do. Which one? Here we go. This was a big one that came out this week with Christmas and just ending and all that stuff. Hasbro. I know you've heard about this. Hasbro
okay.
to replace penis-shaped Play-Doh toy. Did you hear about this?
I kind of did.
Oh. Oh, man. Providence, Rhode Island. It was an embarrassing Christmas for Nidia Cabrera. Drink, guys. I belled myself. After she was accused by her fiancé's mother of letting her 5-year-old granddaughter, I gotta be careful here, play with a sex toy.
A mortified Cabrera asked the child where she got the penis-shaped plastic cylinder. It's from my Play-Doh, the girl replied. Hasbro, the Pawtucket-based toy company, is now doing damage control over the extruder tool in its Play-Doh cake. Mountain Toy. It's the Play-Doh cake mountain toy. Better run out and get one, man. The two-piece syringe-like tool, which includes a tube with corkscrew-type ridges around the outside and a dome-shaped top with a hole at the tip, can be used to squeeze Play-Doh to look like decorative cake frosting. Huh? Can you do that?
I can make cake frosting, sure.
Complaints have been surfacing since at least... Ah! Commercials. Since at least November, when Tulsa, Oklahoma TV station KTUL showed the tool to parents and asked them what they thought. The station blurred the image of the tool during the piece, saying it was due to parents' reactions. One woman told the station it was a pretty phallic cake decorating piece. Pretty phallic? Anyway.
It was pretty something.
Anyway, Aaron Rivers, a mom of two from Melbourne, Florida, thought it was hilarious when she helped her 6-year-old daughter open the box. I think it is, too. Come on, people. Jesus, the kids wouldn't even have known about it if, you know, if the adults didn't go crazy and say, hey, that, you know what that is? You know what I'm saying? I mean, think about it. How many things in a day could we
yes,
take?
Yes, Mom immediately took that toy away from little Betty.
Yeah, well, how many things on this show do we take and turn dirty in a matter of seconds? So, you know, nobody sees things the way we do. Anyway, guys, that is G&D Show in the news.
In the news.
In the news. That was a good
I didn't get to talk about my beer that blew up, Sean.
Oh, you did? Well, add that. We got time to add that.
We have time? I can talk about my beer that blew up?
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the brand of the beer, Sean. Let's just say it talks about a moving stone. And it has an equine as its as its symbol. Uh-huh. But, you know, Rolling Stone gathers no moss and rolling rock and roll and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So if you haven't figured out what beer it was at this point, because I have frozen many a beer to try and get it cold in time to drink it. You know, it's haven't you thrown a beer in the freezer every now and then, Sean?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about it, yeah.
Yeah, well... Usually you go in, you open it, the freezer door, and there's your beer all frozen.
Right.
You know, and now you got to let it thaw if it's not skunked from being frozen. No, I go and open my freezer yesterday. I left it in there. I forgot about it. It was in there for about an hour.
Okay. Oh, my God. And that was it? That's all it takes because, you know.
Yeah. Well, the top of the bottle had literally shattered into about 50 pieces.
Oh, my God.
And glass everywhere. And I'm just sitting there thinking, I have never had a beer explode on me before.
Oh, man. I used to do that all the time. You'd wake
I've
up. I've
exploded
with...
a few beers, but, right. You know, it's a different story.
Right.
Usually after a G&D show. It's,
yeah.
They have to come out somewhere. But, no, I was just a little disappointed in my beer. Wouldn't you be?
What kind of beer were you drinking?
I said, I'm not going to say the brand. It just happened to have a title that resembles a moving stone.
Yeah.
And has an equine as a symbol.
Okay. Well, you guys have a lot of beers out there. That's why I was asking. You know? Hey, Demon Hunter. You know what that sound is?
What is that sound?
You probably don't hear the sound, do you? I got it. Is somebody? Is it, what was that? You have to explain it. You can't just.
That I was trying to find your boob music, but instead I got a woman who can move her boobs to Jingle Bells.
Yeah, that's a good one too. No, you got to look up hot chick that plays Jingle Bell on her boobs. I mean, it's cleavage.
Anyway, really?
Yeah, just look it up. Let me know when you get it, okay?
Anyway, I will keep an eye open for that.
Anyway, guys, you hear that music? This is a G&D original. And the music should tip you off if you're a first-time listener. Every week, where Nathan and I travel the United States and find you the greatest legends. And try to find out if there's any truth to them by putting ourselves in harm's way. Sometimes not so much, but yeah. By driving out and setting traps and doing whatever and investigating these monsters.
To trip north as this year's New Year Ice Mountain Carnival opens in Beijing.
My boots and I are going to perform Jingle Bells.
Oh! Let's hear it. Does she have bells on her? One horse open sleigh. Hey! Jingle bell. Hey!
That just sounds like sharing a hotel room with you at night, man.
I know. Anyway, guys, Legend X series. We go down the haunted, shadowy back roads of America, and we find you a new legend each week. This week's Legend X is...
the Ozark Howler.
Yes, indeedy, my friend. Yes, indeed. You like that? Are you ready for it? The Ozark Howler, Demon Hunter. What are you going to do about that? Are you going to break
the Ozark Howler. Location, the Ozark Mountains.
Oh. Isn't that where the Clampets lived before they...
Well, before they were shooting at some food. And up from the ground came some bubbling crude.
Moved to Beverly. Hey, that brings up a new thing, not to change from legends. Ellie Mae Clampett passed away this week.
She did. I was sad.
I was too. What a sweetheart.
Yeah.
I seen her on
TikTok. She was 80-something.
Fairly young nowadays. Yeah.
But hey, Sean, maybe she heard the Ozark Howler.
She might have.
Because witnesses describe the creature as a large black cat.
Cat, okay.
With horns. And glowing eyes.
Wow.
And it gets its name from the loud, eerie howl that it emits through the Ozark Mountains.
Oh, wow.
In Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Texas.
Okay.
Cryptozoologists have suggested that it is a creature that could be an unrecognized big cat, while
anthropologists
have speculated that the stories of the cryptoid were simply inspired by the black dog deaths found in British folklore.
Oh, we've covered those.
We've covered those because I have the black dog here in Connecticut.
Yeah, and I remember that's when there came out a legend where truck drivers get tired. They see these black dogs. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
And they run off the road, causes them to run off the road or whatever.
However,
I don't know.
Evolutionists
maybe.
Who believe in the Ozark Howler say it could be a modern mountain lion bred or hybrid to be black and or another animal such as that.
This could be.
Now, the thing is, it's been described, and this coming from Wikipedia.
Scary.
As being bear size.
Okay.
With a thick body, stocky legs,
and
black shaggy hair.
That's the picture I'm seeing.
And having very prominent horns. It is often described as being a combination of a wolf and an elk.
Okay.
In its appearance. So I don't know where they get cat out of that.
Now, has anybody went out there and tried to set up... if it's a cat, it likes meat.
Yeah, you would think.
So it would leave traps all over
But is the Ozark there, Sean? There's a lot of things that like meat.
This is true. But you would think a cat like that would be dominant in that area, you know? That it would... other things
Especially
would
leave... Especially a bear-sized cat with moose horns and...
Now, from what I hear, this is a very old legend.
That's what I've heard, too.
Yeah, from what you just read. Anyway, guys, the Ozark Howler. What are we going to do about this, Nathan?
You know, it's a very wide range of territory there, Sean. I think to really cover this one, we'd need to get a grant.
Well, I think if we go out there and see some people or find some eyewitnesses in the Ozark, surely there's some people that have seen it more than once in that area. We could camp out there and see what we could do, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a $2 million grant would really help out.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want to be greedy.
No, that's just $1 million apiece.
That's right. So. Anyway, guys, that's this week's Legend X. Watch out for the Ozark Howler.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ow.
Now, ooh. Well.
Werewolves of London. It kind of looks like a werewolf to me.
To me too. It kind of reminds me of the Beast of Bray Road.
It does remind me of the Beast of Bray Road.
Maybe they're cousins.
Well, I think they are. I think a lot of these things, everybody has these legends and stuff, right? But there has to be something to some of them. Has to.
Well, some kind of animal, at the very least.
Yeah.
I don't think all these stories are made up.
Well, I mean, some of them could be. But I'm not saying they're all, yeah, like you said, they're not all made up. They can't be. I mean, not everybody's just going to say, oh, you know, look, this is a monster. We got to have a monster in this area, you know. They won't do it, Demon Hunter. They can't do it.
I've seen monsters. I know they're real.
I see monsters, Demon Hunter. We got to take a break, but tonight's guest.
Tonight's guest?
The award-winning documentary filmmaker, Aaron Kagyu, stops by. He's produced and directed a 30-minute documentary, Inside the Bridgewater Triangle, and his experience while directing that has inspired the recent documentary, The Bridgewater Triangle. He's going to come by tonight. He's going to tell us about that, take us back in the shadows. Maybe we'll talk to him about the Ozark Howler.
Ooh.
Yeah, because Bridgewater
Triangle. That's a little out of his range.
I don't know. He's going to tell us about all the fascinating stuff and mysteries within the Bridgewater Triangle. Tonight, only at the home of the Mystifying Oracle Radio. You guessed it, because you're here already. The G&D Show. Yeah, but we're going to take our first break of the new year. Tonight's band, Distemper, because we love them so much. Blue, Blue Night is the name of the song. Demon Hunter.
Ghost Biden.
Shadow Nation.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Не без звезды включая, только что-то не спится, все вокруг умирает, чтобы снова родиться. Объектов, вычеркнут новейшие карты, вырастут святые деревья, во дворах заброшенных фабрик, высохнут кровавые реки, не заменят топливом мирным, войны прекратятся навеки, и бездомный пес станет мирным. Может быть, тогда будет лучше этот мир. Чистая вода, города без черных дыр. Может, тоже час небо пальцем надави. Выльются на нас потоки счастья и любви. Может быть, тогда будет нечего делить. И про холода можно навсегда забыть. Может быть, тогда на другой конец земли отвезут меня волшебных страстей кораблей. Каждый виновен, что мир так устроен. Каждый обязан видеть заразу. Каждый виновен, что мир так устроен. Каждый
gwiazdom. Chwili zarazu. Nie wiem ich krowy. Kory za słowa. Sceny pustkami. Wierzymy sami. Silnie jest jedność. Musimy tutaj za nami. Silnie jest jedność. Jeśli nie rozkażę słowami. Silnie jest jedność. Musimy tutaj za nami. Silnie jest jedność. Jeśli nie rozkażę słowami.
TV Indianapolis, Saturday nights at 10 p.m., and right now you're joining me listening to Ghost Man and Demon Hunter. Where else?
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio. Your Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. So good to have you. Please help us welcome tonight's very special guest, award-winning documentary filmmaker Aaron Kagyu. He's coming in, guys. He's going to be in studio. He's right here. He produced and directed in 2003 a 30-minute documentary titled Inside the Bridgewater Triangle. What he saw and covered in that time during that documentary has inspired him to do the recent documentary The Bridgewater Triangle. Please help us welcome Shadow Nation to studio, Mr. Aaron Kagyu. Aaron, what's up, buddy?
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be a guest on your show.
First off, Aaron, we got to start off right away. Are we saying your name right? Let's not say it
you
wrong.
You guys have said it better than any other show I've been a guest on.
See?
You guys nailed it.
Hey, man, that's what we do. I called Aaron before the show. I said, brother, you got to – I interrupted his dinner. I said, you got to help me with this last name, man. And he did. He spelled it out for me, Demon Hunter.
Well, when you have a co-host named Schoonover,
Sean. Spell out phonetically, it makes it easier.
Yeah, it was a lot easier. And I even ran it past Nathan. I said, is it Kagyu or Kagyu? Or? But I nailed it. I feel good about it. But, man, welcome to the show. Hope you like the end of the independent band that you heard coming in. They're a Russian band called Distemper. I don't speak Russian. I don't think Shadow Nation, most of them do, but we do go on all around the world. I'm sure they're saying, it's got a catchy tune, Demon Hunter. I don't know what they're saying.
Yeah, we're very big in Russia, parts that allow them to download us.
It's, yeah, you never know. Remember, guys, support your independent bands, but getting right into it tonight. You know, the Bridgewater Triangle is one of the most mysterious spots in the United States, in America. And you've had the privilege, and you've done the hard work, man, going down the haunted, shadowy back roads inside this place. I say let's jump right into it. I got so many questions, from werewolves to ghosts to UFOs.
I'd like, Sean, if we could right off the bat, to have Aaron just give our listeners a little background on what the Bridgewater Triangle is.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I'd be happy to. In the late 1970s, world-renowned cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman moved from California to Massachusetts. And when he got to Massachusetts, he started, like he did everywhere else that he had lived, started investigating reports of odd occurrences. He was a cryptozoologist, so he was, paying attention to any reports of, Bigfoot sightings, Thunderbird sightings, things of that nature. He moved to the Boston area, but he kept getting reports of odd occurrences, specifically in southeastern Massachusetts, about, 30 to 50 miles south of Boston. And a lot of the reports centered around a mysterious area called the Hockomock Swamp, which is a large wetland in southeastern Massachusetts that spans into several towns. He kind of went out from that point and gathered reports of other strange occurrences outside of a cryptozoological nature, brutal murders, ghost sightings, you name it, it's been seen in the Bridgewater Triangle. Reports of UFOs,
yeah.
And he kind of plotted the points on a map and came up with the rough guidelines for what he called the Bridgewater Triangle, largely because the Bermuda Triangle was a hot topic at the time. So I think it was more or less a play on words for an area of heightened level of reports of odd occurrences in southeastern Massachusetts.
Right. Now, the Native Americans always believed this land, from what I've read, to be cursed. And they say the center of the activity is what you just mentioned, Hockomock Swamp. The Native Americans, they called it Devil's Swamp. Why would they call that?
Well, there's a few translations for Hockomock, and actually the most accurate translation that I've come across is actually place where spirits dwell, more so than devil. I think Devil Swamp was kind of a European twist on what the Native Americans had said.
Yeah.
And the Hockomock Swamp, while a lot of people like to think the Native Americans shunned it and didn't go to the swamp or were afraid of the swamp, it's actually not really accurate. There have been Native American burial sites found in the Hockomock Swamp that date back 8,000 years.
Wow.
And the swamp was also used as a staging ground for Native raids on European settlements during King Philip's War, which on a per capita basis is the bloodiest conflict in American history, which was basically the breaking point between the English settlers and the Wampanoag tribe, the same tribe that they had met when they landed on Plymouth Rock. So it's kind of I think it's developed kind of a false reputation in that regard. But nevertheless, the Hockomock Swamp was very important to the Native Americans. And the rumor is, and this has never been substantiated by anybody, that the Native Americans placed a curse on the Bridgewater Triangle region in response to the bad treatment they received from the European settlers back at that time.
Yeah, I had seen that in your documentary. And by the way, it was a classic documentary. Guys, you have to get it, the Bridgewater Triangle. Being somebody that's an amateur producer of film, I loved the shots you got, the camera shots. They were amazing, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
It was.
We tried to, the Native American aspects of the Bridgewater Triangle, the whole Native American story is kind of interwoven into all these various phenomena that are reported in the area. And we did our best to get a backstory on the Native American history in the region pretty early on in the film. And throughout the film, it keeps coming into the fabric of the story.
Now, Aaron, something that you and I talked about earlier, and I'd gone over with you, that Sean and I are similar. You're very skeptical about all the stories that come into you. And
go ahead.
For so many years, Sean and I have been doing this for so long. You can't do this and build a name in the field without everybody sending you their photos and their EVPs and their everything. And basically, we have to take everything with a grain of salt because, some people try and pull one over on us. Two, people are mistaken. And three, people want to believe in the supernatural because it gives them some sense of either a spiritual being or just being special. So we have to take everything lightly in the beginning until we get into it. you've researched all this stuff so heavily, and how has that affected keeping your skeptical view on it? When you read this stuff and you research it and you delve into it and you film it, have you had anything happen that's made you like question your skepticism?
Yeah, I know we're limited on time here. There are two stories and one occurrence related to this documentary that, even as a major skeptic like myself, even made me take a step back and kind of scratch my head. I tell people I walked into this project as a 99% skeptic, and I walked away still a 96% skeptic. But there were a couple of stories that we mentioned in the film, and one occurrence that actually happened while filming, which is, to this day, the closest thing I would consider to a paranormal experience. One of the stories was a gentleman named Bill Russo, who lives in Raynham, Massachusetts, which is a town that's in that Hockomock Swamp region.
Yeah.
He used to work the midnight shift, and back in 1990, he would take his dog out for a walk when he got home from the midnight shift, and he tells a story of encountering a 3 to 4 foot tall hair-covered creature that kind of appeared underneath a street lamp in the middle of the night while he was walking his dog. The creature attempted to communicate with him verbally and basically was beckoning him to come closer. And the interesting thing about Bill's story is that he waited 20 years to tell his story. He waited till he was retired. He figured at this point in his life he had nothing to lose. He wasn't afraid of the ridicule that he might face.
Yeah.
And he was gracious enough to agree to tell his story in our documentary. And just the way that he tells the story, he just seems so credible and so convincing. And he's just a really, really nice guy. I tell people he strikes you the type of guy that could be anybody's grandfather. And there's just no way, in my mind, that he's making this up. I mean, maybe he misidentified what he saw, but in his mind, he is absolutely convinced that he saw something that cannot be explained.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
No, go ahead, Aaron.
No, that I don't know if you guys have seen the whole film, the pieces of the film, or if either one of you have seen that scene that I'm referring to. But it might be my favorite part of the whole documentary.
Yeah. He looks like your grandfather, and I think that's the thing your film captures. You look into these people's eyes, eyewitnesses, and they tell you this story, and you have to believe through their eyes. And I got to tell you, I believe this dude.
Yeah, he just came across, like I said, came across as very, very credible. Another story that was, in my mind, very, very credible was we have a whole section of the film that talks about various UFO sightings in the Bridgewater Triangle. And in 1979, two radio news reporters were driving to a place called the Raynham Dog Track after work to grab a drink and bet on some dog races. And they were pulling off of Route 24, which is a major highway that cuts through the Bridgewater Triangle region.
Right.
And they claimed that they saw this very large, very low, very slow-flying, home plate-shaped craft in the skies above the exit on 24 that heads the Raynham Dog Track. And they both corroborated this story and described the exact same craft they saw at the same time. They were driving in the same car. But the interesting part about that is, after they had their encounter, the Brockton Enterprise, which is a newspaper local to that area, ran a story that hundreds of people in the Bridgewater Triangle area and on the South Shore of Massachusetts were reporting the exact same craft in that spring of 1979. So it's really interesting whether what these people were seeing was of an extraterrestrial origin or not. Nobody can say. Or maybe it was more like something like a top-secret government craft or early stealth technology, but
right.
We actually feature three direct eyewitnesses to that strange craft in the documentary.
You know, that's
all
one of the...
who saw that in 1979.
That's one of the things, Aaron, and it's funny you brought that up because I was going to ask you about it. You say, you know, it could be military craft, whatever. Now, these UFO sightings, guys, out here at the Triangle, these people have been seeing this stuff, I mean, since the first documented case in 1760, 10 o'clock in the morning, a sphere of fire that was observed over New England in this area. These are historic records that have this stuff out there. And, you know, 1960s and, like you said, the 70s, it couldn't be a military craft in the 1760 unless the military was really advanced.
The 1760 report, you know, there's not much information to go by on that one, and there's not much documentation. But in 1908, which was before the dawn of military aircraft,
right.
Two carriage-driving undertakers reported seeing a strange light in the sky of the Bridgewater region. almost as if it was like some sort of a hot air balloon moving rapidly in different directions in the sky. And this, it was interesting because this sighting actually occurred on Halloween night, and it was two carriage-riding undertakers, I thought. So it's a really interesting story. And there was a Boston Globe article actually featuring that story that we actually show in the documentary as well. So, you know, going into the project, I wasn't that much – I still don't consider myself a paranormal enthusiast or, you know, a UFO enthusiast. And especially with UFOs, I didn't really have that much of an interest in UFOs. But it turns out that the UFO section of the film actually features some really strong eyewitness accounts of these strange phenomena. And one of the interesting things about the Bridgewater Triangle is you have reports of cryptic animals, you have reports of UFOs, reports of ghosts, you know, increased level of bizarre crime, especially in the Freetown State Forest. Now, in and of themselves, there's no real reason as to why all of these various phenomena would be related to one another. Right. The only thing that makes them all related is the fact that they all take place within this 200-square-mile region. Otherwise, you know, these things wouldn't really be connected. So the Bridgewater Triangle is kind of unique in that fashion.
Now, when you're looking at this, at these testimonies, and people are making their reports and stuff like that, do you look outside the Bridgewater Triangle to find anything to collaborate their testimonies? The UFOs in 1979 just catch my mind because I remember I had a nephew that was born in 1979. We were going to visit him in the spring, and I remember my mom and I were in the car, and a giant green ball of light flew over the car, and I found out that like hundreds of people had seen this giant green ball of light fly through my hometown. And I grew up in New Jersey, not in Massachusetts, but there seemed to have been quite a few UFO sightings during that year. So did you like research any other evidence outside the triangle to collaborate the evidence inside?
Well, I do remember researching a little bit, and the years escapes me, and I'm not a paranormal researcher or enthusiast. You know, I did the research to do this film, but my next project probably won't be related to the paranormal.
Yeah.
I did remember reading a lot about people in Belgium actually seeing craft very similar to what people had described in the Bridgewater Triangle back in 1979. I mean, and when you think about, if you're talking about extraterrestrial craft that can travel at speeds that we can't even fathom, I mean, you would think they wouldn't be localized to a 200-square-mile region in southeastern Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You know, they
that's just their landing zone, Aaron. Didn't you know
that?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's
well, you hear, we didn't talk about it in the film, but there are people that claim that there's a secret underground government base beneath the Hockomock Swamp. Yeah. I mean, the theories for, you know, what's going on in the Bridgewater Triangle are very strange, and that's one of the more outlandish ones that I've heard, that there's some sort of a secret underground bunker there. Who knows? You know, we've talked to some eyewitnesses after the film came out because we've kind of taken it around to show it at various venues. And we've had people tell us about UFOs appearing over Bridgewater State College, which is right in that area, and then it seeming that the UFOs were originating from the Hockomock Swamp region. So who knows? You know, who am I to doubt what these people are, you know, that what these people are saying. I mean, they all right. seem so genuine when they tell us their stories.
Yeah. You know, one thing, have you ever heard of Nephilim, Aaron?
I haven't.
Okay, we had author Fritz Zimmerman come on. He's the author of Nephilim, Fallen Angels of the Ohio Valley. Now, that's out my way. But I just wonder with these triangle things, the thing about the Nephilim, these are giants that supposedly roamed at some time here in the world. And they were basically wiped out after a while, and they died out. But their mounds, like we have Mound State Park here, I'm sure out there in Massachusetts you guys have different mound parks and stuff like that. They're saying that they're uncovering these giant human bones. Of course, you see pictures all over YouTube and stuff, but I've never seen one myself. But, you know, he believes the position of these mounds created these energy sources or these, I don't know, what do you say, Nathan, like vortexes?
Spiritual vortexes, because the Nephilim, by story, can't go to heaven, so their spirits linger.
Yeah, and, you know, talking about these Indians, Dighton Rock, stuff like that, I believe is the one that has the Indian face or right across from it. Do you think the Indians might have... Huh?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't catch you up. What was your question about
saying,
the Indians?
Do you think the Indians might have done something like this, created like a burial spot that we don't know about that could have created something like this, some kind of paranormal celestial vortex or something, you know?
you know, I mean, as a skeptic, I don't know how much of that I would say that I buy into or whatever, but I will say that, you know, as I said earlier, that the Native American aspects of the Bridgewater Triangle are there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
You know, I like to tell people that the Bridgewater Triangle, more than just an area where there's a reported increased level of paranormal activity, it's almost like a window into the unexplained, because there's things associated with the Bridgewater Triangle that in and of themselves are not necessarily paranormal. And the, like you mentioned, Dighton Rock is a 40-ton boulder that was plucked out of the Taunton River that has bizarre carvings and inscriptions on the face of this boulder that was sitting in the river. And there's been a debate among scientists and archaeologists as to what culture was responsible for these petroglyphs. And you have theories of everything ranging from Viking explorers to Phoenician explorers, Portuguese explorers, that the carvings were done by Native Americans.
Amazing.
And they have this museum that presents all of these different theories. And some people say it was like a billboard, and whoever was passing by would do their own carving on the rock. And so you have the mystery of Dighton Rock. You have Profile Rock, which is a naturally occurring stone site in Assonet, Massachusetts, which is part of Freetown, not too far from Dighton Rock, which is like the old man on the mountain in New Hampshire, where if you stand at this rock formation at a certain angle, it looks like the profile of a Native American man.
Yeah.
And so you have these sacred Native American sites, these sites that have a strong association with Native Americans. There's a story of a burial ground on a place called Grassy Island back in the 1930s when they opened up these tombs. The red ochre that they used to pack the bodies mysteriously bubbled and dissolved and disappeared, and that the photographs that were taken during an expedition wouldn't have developed. So there, who knows if there's some sort of a Native American energy to the region. There definitely are multiple reports of burial grounds being unearthed in this area.
Now, Sean, one of your favorite mythical creatures, Puckwudgies.
Puckwudgies!
Have been sighted in the Bridgewater Triangle.
They had. We actually, I told you before, Aaron, we had done some research ourselves, nothing like you, but we had researched a little bit of a location for a little sizzle we were going to film for a production company, and, I mean, the place is amazing. One of the aspects, or one of the things I found in my research that isn't speculation, and it isn't guesswork, is the fact that many young people that I found or that I had heard word of mouth had committed suicide off one of these rocks. I don't think it was Dighton, but they had jumped to their deaths. Can you talk about that at all?
No. Yeah, you know, when you're talking about the Bridgewater Triangle, the two main locations that people like to talk about are Hockomock Swamp, which is in the northwestern portion of the triangle, kind of in the middle up near the northwest, and then the Freetown State Forest, which is a large state preserve in the lower right-hand corner of the triangle. And within the state forest is a place called the Ledge, which is actually a stone quarry that was dug during the Depression that provided the stone to build some of the places like Newport Mansions and things of that nature. And the Ledge is a very steep drop from a stone cliff into a quarry that's said to be over 80 feet deep. Now, I suicides are kind of hard to track because you don't see them reported in the newspaper unless they're a famous person.
Right.
I do know police officers in the area that said yes, they have dug bodies out of the quarry there. But also, I've seen videos of kids jumping from the ledge into the quarry and surviving, doing it as like a stunt on YouTube. So I guess it depends on which part of this ledge that you jump from. But the stories of the Puckwudgies are tied to the ledge, but that's also an interesting aspect because, you know, Puckwudgies date back to pre-colonial times and part of Native American folklore, and as the story goes, they'll lead you to your death off places like the ledge, but
yeah.
The ledge didn't exist until the 1930s because it was a quarry that they were digging for rock.
Right.
So people that like to tie in ancient Native American folklore into the ledge are mistaken because it wasn't around back then.
Well, the PUDs, the PUDs found their opportunity there, Aaron. I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the Puckwudgie sightings are reported frequently. Chris Balzano's book, Doc Woods, has a good chapter talking about Puckwudgie sightings specifically in the Freetown State Forest. But since the film came out, Bill Russo's encounter in Raynham has now been attributed to being a possible Puckwudgie encounter. And
what?
Then he actually went on to be featured on Destination America's Monsters, Mysteries in America to tell his story, and they attributed it to a Puckwudgie, whereas we weren't exactly sure. He wasn't exactly sure, so we didn't present it that way. We just suggested that it possibly could have been that.
Sure. Now, did you guys videotape this possible Puckwudgie? Did you get any footage of it?
No, I mean, this was, he told, you know, his encounter happened 20 years ago.
Okay.
So, you know, we weren't able to capture Puck Wudgie on film, but we had an artist come up with basically working as like a police sketch artist for an accurate depiction of what Bill Russo claimed that he saw.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about, because everybody has these legends of ghostly figures. I love them. Ever since I was a kid, I've tracked down these stories, you know, from the Lonely Hitchhiker in Chicago, Resurrection Mary, all these different legends. Now, out there, you have the Red-Headed Hitchhiker. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, we have a couple. The Red-Headed Hitchhiker of Route 44 is the most famous. It's first featured in Charles Turk Robinson's book, Ghost Files in New England. New England Ghost Files, I'm sorry. And as the story goes, there's a secondary highway that runs east to west in the Bridgewater Triangle region. And where it passes through the town of Rehoboth, near the Seekonk line, people have reported seeing a phantom who looks like an old red-headed farmer with curly red hair and a beard and overalls trying to hitch a ride along this Route 44. And then there's all sorts of stories that, you know, he'll get in the car and then disappear. Or his face will appear across the windshield, or if you have three people in your car, he'll appear in the fourth seat. Now, as a skeptic, I don't lend a lot of credibility to the stories of the Red-Headed Hitchhiker because I've never come across a first-hand eyewitness of this. The people that are featured in New England Ghost Files were all given aliases, and we were not able to track those people down. And when you do hear somebody say something about the Red-Headed Hitchhiker, it's always like my best friend's cousin's boyfriend's sister's roommate. It's like fourth and fifth hand stories.
Right.
And so, but you know, urban legend is one of those things that, just like everything else, weaves itself into the story of the Bridgewater Triangle. We felt it was important to talk about the Red-Headed Hitchhiker.
Sure.
Paranormal researcher Jeff Belanger had dug into the Red-Headed Hitchhiker story and claimed that he talked to a first hand witness on the phone. And just when Jeff was going to interview him about his story, the guy didn't return any of his calls. So there are some people that, you know, say that they may have seen it, but it's hard to pin those people down.
You know, CIA must have got him.
I was just happy to see that the Red-Headed Hitchhiker was a guy, because when Sean and I were looking into possibly visiting the Bridgewater Triangle, I knew if it turned out to be a hot chick, he was going to have us driving up and down that road all night long trying to find it.
Yeah, man. Come on, dude.
Well, I will say the sister story to the Redhead. Well, I guess it wouldn't be the sister story, but another story in the region is there's a dirt road that runs through the Freetown State Forest called Copacut Road, which unless you have an off-road SUV, you're not going to make it down the length of this road. And there's a legend about Copacut Road called the menacing mad trucker. It's kind of a lesser-known roadside ghost story, but as the story goes, you'll be driving along Copacut Road, and all of a sudden this pickup truck will appear behind you, flashing its light like it's a crazy guy at the wheel, and then he proceeds to run you off the road. So we felt it was important to touch on that story as well, so we went out to shoot some reenactment on Copacut Road in the dead of night. And it's funny, Freetown's kind of a backwoods type of a little sleepy town, about 9,000 people in it. And then we're out shooting. All of a sudden, this really old, beat-up pickup truck just comes putting out of the woods on Copacut Road in the middle of the night.
Jeepers
and
creepers.
This really, like, backwoods, hick-looking dude just kind of drove past us, didn't say a word, kind of gave us a nod, and just went putting by in his truck. So we joked to this day that, you know, we saw the menacing mad trucker while we were out shooting those reenactments.
Oh, wow.
It's funny, too, when you get into those stories, because Sean and I have looked into so many.
You got a pretty mouth there.
And like the menacing trucker is also a big story down in Alabama.
Yep.
There's a town down in Alabama that has the same story, and these stories just seem to grow, and you don't know, are these just folklore, modern day folklore, or, you know, did somebody actually get run off the road one night, and or did somebody get drunk and run off the road and had to explain to the cops and said it was a ghost trucker?
It's possible, and, you know, I think when you're in a place specifically like the Freetown State Forest, you know, if you go into if you know the forest reputation, you go in there, and, you know, you see a strange truck driving down the road, you can see how your imagination would run wild with you, and you might think that you saw, you know, a ghost truck or something like that. Your human mind is a very powerful thing when you go into these locations with a preconceived notion of them being haunted or having strange occurrences. It's very easy for your mind to start playing tricks on you and for you to start to attribute every little thing that you see to being paranormal and unexplained. But you know, that's not, you know, I find those folklore / urban legend stories to be a lot of fun, and I think that they're fun to talk about. And you can picture a group of high school kids, you know, driving down Route 44 in Rehoboth, and one of the stories is if you park your car directly on the Seekonk Rehoboth line and honk your horn three times, that the redheaded hitchhiker will appear in front of your car. And you can just imagine a car full of high school kids doing that, you know, as a laugh. So I can imagine Sean and I doing that. Are you kidding? I would have thought that would have been a blast. I probably would still do it now if I was in a town with some people joking around or whatever.
Yeah,
it would be a fun thing to do.
You know, one thing I found interesting, Aaron, was the Freetown Police. Apparently, they've been getting calls for years from the Fall River State Forest area, and they've apparently, what they said was they've investigated several mutilated animals. They say it looks like a sacrifice, and they went on national TV, or I'm sorry, they went on local TV last year. They interviewed a couple of them. They said Fox 25, who reported on it, said that the mutilations remain a baffling mystery. That's what the Freetown Police is quoted as saying. Did you get a chance to talk to any of the officers?
Oh, yeah, we interviewed Lieutenant Detective Alan Alves, who's retired from the Freetown Police, who was heavily involved in investigating that activity. And as far as we've uncovered, the activity has been attributed to self-stylized Satanists. And I say self-stylized because if you do any research into the religion of Satanism, it's largely an atheistic religion where it's more or less worshiping oneself, and they don't actually believe in a satanic deity, or they don't believe in Satan as like a.
Oh yes, we've had the high priestess of the Satanist priest on the church on our show. So.
Oh yeah, see, so yeah, I just try to preface this by saying, you know, because I'm not trying to attribute that activity to any one specific brand of Satanism or anything like that, but as far as we've uncovered, that it was back in the, you know, primarily in the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s. Where these self-stylized Satanists were conducting these rituals in the Freetown State Forest. And, you know, we feature in the film file photos and file videos that were provided to us by Alan Alves, a lot of them showing ritualistic markings, and in some instances, there was one instance where a dozen baby calves were butchered in a remote section of the Freetown State Forest, and we were provided that video footage as well. So there is a lot of legitimacy to what we've been told, and there was a high-profile case. Now, it's called the Freetown Fall River State Forest, and the city of Freetown, the city of Fall River, is not too far away, and may or may not be included in the Bridgewater Triangle, depending on how you draw the boundaries. But Fall River is already famous as the home of the Lindsay Borden murders.
Okay.
But another high-profile case there was back in the late 70s. There was a string of prostitutes that were murdered, three, as a matter of fact, that were tied in with a group of pimps and prostitutes that were also allegedly part of a satanic cult that was, and these three women were reportedly murdered as part of a satanic ritual. And this same group was said to be practicing their rituals also in the Freetown State Forest, which is easily accessible from the city of Fall River. So there was a tie-in with that cult and a lot of the activity that was being reported in the Freetown State Forest. So that was an interesting tie-in, and we do talk about that case in the film as well.
Right. Now, there's a place out here in Indiana, Aaron, and I've always had an interest with it, and I was thinking about doing something out here. It's called Lucky Point. Have you ever heard of that?
I haven't, but I'm going to Google it after I get off.
Google that, brother.
Lucky
Point, Indiana. I mean, it is literally in the nowhere, nowhere of Indiana, and I actually called some of the police departments out there to see if I could gain access to some property out there and set up a tent for a while. I mean, it is, I think, number two or number three most reported UFO and Bigfoot and monster sightings in the world. You'll freak out. You can't believe it's here in the Midwest, but, I mean...
I actually just Googled it while I was talking to you, and there's a smorgasbord of information that I've seen UFOs, a section on MUFON's website talking about it. So, yeah, that sounds pretty interesting.
Well, dust off the cameras, bro. Let's get Nathan and I out there, and let's do this thing. Let's cover it. Let's make it a mini-series. Dun, dun, dun,
there
dun.
You go.
See?
It's funny, too, because you get out to these locations, and have you found it got a little bit into your blood there, Aaron, that, you know, being a skeptic but being so immersed into it, you hear everybody's got a story. They all want to tell you their story.
Well, yeah.
But you hear that one, and all of a sudden that little divining rod goes off in your head and goes, ooh, I want to hear more about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Bill Russo serves as a perfect example of that. And I will tell you, I don't know how much time you guys have, but I did experience what I would consider the closest thing I've ever experienced to a paranormal occurrence while shooting the documentary. I could try to give you a quick synopsis of what happened. We were filming an interview in the Freetown State Forest with Chris Baldano, who is a researcher that's done a lot of work in the Bridgewater Triangle. And we were talking about the Native American aspects to the triangle and how at the end of King Philip's War, this wampum belt was presented as a symbol of the Wampanoag surrender to the English the colonial officials. And the wampum belt has since disappeared from record. Nobody knows what happened to it, whether it's in a museum over in England or whether it sank on a transatlantic journey and is at the bottom of the Atlantic. We don't know. But some of the researchers in the area say that the mysterious occurrences in the Bridgewater Triangle will continue until the wampum belt is returned to its rightful owners, the Wampanoag people. And while he was talking about the legends of the wampum belt, we were shooting this interview in the middle of the Freetown State Forest at night. It was an interview that wasn't supposed to happen in the first place, but since Chris lost his keys in his car and we had to wait for AAA for 2 hours to come get us, it gave us a perfect opportunity to shoot this interview. So we set up a battery-operated camera light and we were shooting this interview. And he was talking about the legends of the wampum belt. And while he was talking about it, the light shut off, which, you know, I've had that happen a lot while shooting video, and it was not a huge deal. So we get everything back up and running, and one of the guys that was with us in the background says, hey, Chris, do you realize that while you were talking about the legend of the wampum belt that the light shut off? We all got kind of a chuckle out of it. And then Chris, almost jokingly, or like as if he was like taunting a spirit, turned to his side as if he was addressing a ghost and said, we hear your message. If I could, I would return it. And no word of a lie, as soon as he said the words return it, the light shut off a second time. And they were a set of brand new Duracells. I watched the guy who provided the light put a brand new pack of Duracells in there. And when that light shut off for that second time, even as a skeptic, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, the hair on my arm stood up. I was in the middle of the Freetown State Forest, which has that reputation. It was a couple weeks before Halloween. And I was just, I said to myself, I said, this is the type of thing that all of these ghost hunting shows and all these networks would kill for something like this to happen.
Check, please.
And it happened completely organically, and it's a moment that I will never forget, and we feature it in the film.
Yeah. Well, that's classic. Classic entertainment. The Bridgewater Triangle, where can I get my hands on a copy of that? Where can the listeners get something?
You can go right to www.bridgewatertriangle.com. You can buy it on Blu-ray, you can buy it on DVD, and you can also stream it through Vimeo on demand. We just actually lowered the price on that for $2.99. You can watch the whole feature-length film. And sometime in 2015, a broadcast hour version of our film will air on Destination America. We're not sure what the date will be. But to see the film in its entirety, the full 90-minute feature, you got to go to BridgewaterTriangle.com.
And they can also go to TheBridgewaterTriangleDocumentary.com, correct?
Yeah, they'll both take you to the same exact website. I just usually give the shorter URL because it's easy to remember.
That's awesome, Aaron.
And if you Google Bridgewater Triangle, we'll come up number one and number two organically in the search, so you can find it that way, too.
Well, congratulations, Aaron, on the Bridgewater Triangle. It's amazing. I know you put a lot of hours in, a lot of hard work, and it definitely shows, brother.
Well, thank you very much, and I really appreciate you guys having me on. You know, it was a small, independent film, very, very low budget, and when shows like yours call us to talk about the film, it really helps us out, and we really, really appreciate it, and can't thank you enough for the opportunity.
Hey, that sounded very PR there. He's done this before, Nathan.
Darn it, I thought we were the first.
Dang it, Aaron. That's your problem. No, man.
In all seriousness, guys, thank you very, very much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Aaron. It's, you know, like you said, this is, you're a filmer, and you're a producer, and you get to go out there, and you do these things, and then you experience it. And Sean and I have always tried to get that view of people, not just the people trying to tell their ghost story, but the people who have, like, lived the experience. And that's what you've gotten to do through talking to all these people. And that's what we love to do. So it's been a pleasure having you on.
Well, like I said, thanks a lot. And good luck. You know, you guys are running a great show there. And I wish you the best of luck with it. Maybe I'll cross paths with you guys again.
Absolutely. Anything you need, just give us a call, man.
Well, again, like I said, thanks for having me, and have a really happy New Year.
All right.
Shoot us an email when you find out when your show is going to be on the TV, and we'll announce that too, so everybody tunes in.
Will do. Yeah, they already gave us 2 air dates, which they ended up falling back on and pushing back. So I'll wait until it's absolutely concrete, but we'll be sure to let you know.
But boy, do we know how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating, but, you know, they got to do what they got to do. So.
Aaron Cadieux, everybody. Thanks so much, Aaron. Have a good night, brother.
Have a great night. Take it easy.
Good night, man.
All right, bro. That was an awesome show. Aaron's awesome.
That was a fun show, my friend.
Yeah, and make sure, guys, you check out the Bridgewater Triangle, because that really was an interesting film, and you can tell it's a labor of love. You put a lot of hard work into it. What do you say we pay some bills and end it on a high note?
Definitely. I also want people to go to thebridgewatertriangle.com or thebridgewatertriangledocumentary.com. Check out some of the clips there. You'll get some hints about what you're going to see when you order the video.
Yeah, it does have a couple teasers up there, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, sir.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit. What did you see when you went there? Because I went to a couple others, and they kind of went in a different direction. Because people are going to go, they're going to Google Bridgewater Triangle, and you can't just bring it up like on YouTube. I found that out.
No. You've got to go to, well, like he said, bridgewatertriangle.com or thebridgewatertriangledocumentary.com. And if you go to trailers and scenes.
Yeah.
You'll get a whole bunch of different clips right there that are downloaded directly to the site. And there's Bridgewater Triangle trailer is right there. There's some of the Bigfoot scenes available and some of the UFO scenes available. And there's also just some information about the area and the town and the people. So I would definitely go and check it out.
Well, everybody, thanks for joining us tonight. We want to leave you with this thought. Jingle all the way. Anyway, let's pay the bills.
You, sir.
Yes. We think alike. That's it, guys.
I just noticed she spit while she was doing it.
That's it. Hey, special thanks to all our sponsors, all our carriers, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Creative Commons. Oh, and Action Audio Apps. Hey, are you listening? They want to know. Check them out. ActionAudioApps.net, Midnight Syndicate, Creative Commons, and Free Music Archives. Thanks for the tunes. From the haunted backroads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Night, guys. You messed me up. Jesus.
That's my job.